You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our iZombie edition. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
We're here to talk about iZombie Season 1, Episode 7, Maternity Live.
I love their titles. I love them, love them. And this one just takes the cake.
They're very fun, and somebody is having fun with the titles. The ones that I see coming up are, I'm not even going to name them because we have to wait until we get to them so we can talk about how much we love them as well. They're falling down a little bit on the job this week, though, Alex, with their panel title cards. Mm. Not as happy with these. We have Babe in the Woods, The Mother Lobe, Anyone Can Be a Father, It's a Living, Missed Signals, and what was that? Oh, Car Trouble, and finally Two Birds, One Stone. I think somebody went on vacation this week, and an intern filled in to write them.
They were really light on the puns.
Yeah.
This week on title cards, and that's kind of disappointing. They were still funny in a way, but they weren't as hilarious as, for example, last week's. I can still think about the last week's cards, and I want to giggle. Here, they were okay. It feels like they used up all their witty brilliance on the title of the episode, and then came up short. But still, maternity leave. I can forgive them everything for this.
Like I said, somebody went on vacation and left the intern in charge of the titles, and they were scared. I can't think of anything funny.
This intern is not a paid intern. I can tell by the quality of the work.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, is I have a feeling that's going to be our biggest rant. If you listen to our other podcast, Gotham, that is rant heavy. This, I think, is going to be a rant light episode. So that's, I think, our biggest rant in this episode is the panel
that's
titles.
The biggest
suck.
Problem we have with this episode, I think. that says a lot for a show that was supposed to be this light entertainment and not ambitious at all, that we end up loving it the most.
Well, last night when it aired, because unfortunately we don't have advanced copies of iZombie, hello CW, let us know so that we can get these out right after the show. I was watching it with Doreen, actually, and because she was over, she had to go to the airport this morning, and we actually had some choice of shows. She'd had a long day at work. She had a really early flight this morning, and I'm like, well, we can watch something if you want, like iZombie. She goes, oh, yeah. She skipped sleep so that she could watch iZombie, and she's flying back to spend time with her mother. So she needed the sleep, but she wanted to watch iZombie. And something she agreed with me on is we both thought when this show started that, and you and I have talked about this, that Major was just going to be this total throwaway character, and we really love where he's going. I want to start talking about Major and how he's fitting into the storyline with his own storyline. I mean, right now, this is our, second episode without a honest-to-goodness Team Zombie presence? But we still have that Team Zombie presence with Major and what he's looking into and what he's finding. And he calls Clive because he wants to talk about the leads that he's found with the video and all this kind of stuff with the Candyman. I really like Clive. Clive has grown on me too. Clive really needs to ask a few more questions, though.
Yeah.
Because when the reporter jumps in, and is like, what? You don't think it's important enough for the police to follow through with blah, blah, blah? I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah. It's
a great scene.
That was so painful, and I cringed. I didn't even have the words in the moment as I was watching it to describe how painful what I was feeling was. Because, come on, Clive thought, I'm going to jump to his defense because he has grown on me as well. He's like a fungus, apparently.
But we love you, Malcolm. She doesn't mean that the way it sounds.
No, okay. I mean it because I care. I adore you. But yeah, that's how I start liking people. They grow on me like fungus. When he was convinced that he's talking, maybe not to his friend, because he and Major do not have the same kind of relationship that Major and Ravi have, which is awesome bromance. But they have a common link, because they both know and are somewhat close to Liv. So Clive was convinced he's talking to someone he can trust, and I believe, and I could tell in a moment. He was just, come on, man, I have this big case and I already got some slack from my superior about this. Can we not go through this again? And the reporter comes in, which is really, really not helpful. And I can understand why Clive would be somewhat angry, let's say. Yeah, let's call it that way.
But at the same time, you mean like how he says, your ex screwed me.
Yeah, that would be that. But at the same time, while my heart goes out to Clive, I love that Major is taking initiative.
Mm-hmm.
The cops aren't helping him, and he clearly cannot do this, as evidenced by last week's complete, failure of a confrontation that he had with the henchman.
2 weeks ago, because last week was the psych out where we thought
he was dead. Yes, which is, you know, why I'm saying last week, because no, it wasn't funny. But I like that one avenue of investigation failed. The second one did not pan out the way Major thought it would. So now he's reaching out to a reporter, which is, mm-hmm. I feel like, a logical step. Especially since we already saw her questioning the cops about the missing kids.
Right.
So I like where he's going with this, and I like the initiative. I like mm-hmm. how active he is with the case, even though there's very, very little he can do right now, at the moment. And hopefully it will stay this way, because we do not want Major to become a zombie.
No. Yeah, I liked that he did go that avenue, because it made sense. I mean, we have, again, just that little setup of that reporter at the press conference for Emily Sparrow and her murder, she asks the question about all these missing kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we already know that she's on this trail. And we already know that Major is on this trail and he's been doing things. So it makes sense. I don't have to see them getting together. I don't have to see him talking to her or her mm-hmm. talking to him because of the social worker type stuff. I get that these two would have hooked up for this research. And like you said, he's been trying to find tried to do it on his own. He's tried to do it with the police. The police just don't care because these are homeless kids or troubled kids or whatever. So it's not as big of a deal as some rich family's daughter. And so I totally buy that. And what I really loved was the way Robert Buckley was portraying it. I mean, I saw this pain on his face of wanting to find out what's going on and to solve this and to dig deeper and really care about these kids, that it's not just whatever, they're nobody, so they don't really matter, which, especially with things that are going on in the States right now, mm-hmm. with those same kind of issues, that you see somebody that does care that much and is really trying to find a solution. And then you have our reporter, Rebecca Henson, who, she kind of reminds me, actually, of the reporter that was in the first season of Broadchurch, where she was trying to dig and get some investigation and really get into it. Or even Kate Mara's character on the first season of House of Cards. It has mm-hmm. that same kind of feel of, you know, screw the establishment, how you're doing it, what you're covering, what you're telling me, the party line, I'm going to find out what's going on. And I think they make an interesting pair, which I think is good for Major to have that pairing. And I'm not even saying they're going to be romantic, but I think with Liv kind of moving. Yeah, I think with Liv kind of moving on, he needs somebody that's not just Ravi, his gamer friend, or, you know, so he needs, or Peyton or something like that. This is kind of his own friend that has something outside of Liv.
Yeah. Plus, you know, a female character that appears to be somewhat important to the story arc, which is always good. I will mm-hmm. always applaud the writers for introducing more female characters. I honestly, at this stage, don't care if they hook up romantically or not, but I want to see more of her doing her job, investigated
right.
this thing with Major. Hopefully we'll see more of her as the season progresses. We still have 6 episodes, so a lot can change. The fact that she's investigating those missing kids will put her directly in the crosshairs of Blaine, of a terrible name, which means that she is really high on the list of possible zombie victims, where she either turns into a zombie or dies a horrible and painful death. I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm going with option 3.
Yeah, nothing happens to her and she lives happily ever after and gets her Pulitzer for, you know, disclosing, oh my god, the zombie apocalypse is here. I like this option. We'll see. We'll see. Hey, we already know her name. Rebecca
Henson. Yeah. She's got a name and we know your name.
So we will be paying attention.
Well, your character name.
Let's give it an episode or two when we get attached and then Google what's the actress's name.
That's true. Because right now, I mean, I love having her in there. And like I said, I like Major having somebody to interact with that is not directly connected to Liv. I think that's really important so that it doesn't feel like all of Seattle is really incestuous and totally revolves around Liv. So I think that's good. But I think this episode really was a great moment for Robert Buckley to kind of shine and for Major to show some of that action when he, the fact that he follows that henchman guy to the tanning salon. So I guess zombie flesh tans in the tanning bed. And then decides to do that moment where he's got to find out this guy's name and he breaks into his car and we see all these different things with the hair color and the hot sauce and the brains. And we do get a receipt to show that this guy's name is Julian DuPont. Really? Really? I want to hear from somebody, if we have any listeners in Seattle, I really want to know, are the names on the show indicative of names in Seattle? Because he did not strike me as a Julian DuPont.
Yeah. Why would you do this to a guy who looks like he could, you know, move a car 100 feet without, you know, breaking a sweat? And of course his name is Julian. Just like DuPont. The big bad is called Blaine.
When Julian, because now we have his name.
No, I'm going to call him Henchman.
when he comes out and he sees the cops and him and the cops are looking at each other, did you at all for a moment think that maybe just like the chief is a zombie, that these cops could be zombies too? I mean, just for a split second, I'm like, okay, how pervasive is this? Because it was almost like Julian was like, yeah. You arrest him. You know everything's good. Everything's good between us. He's the problem kind of thing. I don't know. Just for a minute there, I was like, do we have more zombies?
I wasn't thinking about whether or not the two of them are zombies. I was thinking, okay, keep cool. Do not zombie out. Do not attack those cops. They are innocent victims here. Stay cool. Because I knew that if he zombied out or, you know, got his zombie rage on, that Major would also get caught in his poor, you know, zombie outrage thingy. And I was afraid. For a split second, it was like, oh my god, this is not going to be good. And it didn't end up all that well for our poor baby Major. But in a way, I liked how the henchman, or Julian, how he dealt with it. Because, you know, yes, it's a brain. Everybody can see it. So he went with a cat brain.
Calf's brain.
Yeah, so calf's brain. And that made kind of sense, especially since he had this, you know, business card. Meet cute, once again. Props for name. So it all worked out for him. And I particularly liked the way he winked at Major. Like, yeah, I got it. I got this.
Yeah.
Look at me, how awesome and adorable I am.
It's like he was winking at Major because he's in on the joke, but Major's not. But ha 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 ha. If you only knew, Major, what's going on. I don't know how much Major's gonna know, though, since now he's in jail with all those big thugs.
Yeah.
A little thank you for the article.
Apparently nobody knows that he is in jail, because everybody, nobody could get a hold of him, like, at the end of the episode. So I wonder how long he's going to sit in that jail cell. And we'll see. But I really like how everything's, okay, Gotham, my darlings, this is how you do a side plot. Because in this episode, Major's story arc was pretty much on the side, and if you, took it out, not much would change for the main plot line. But it was still, nicely, included in everything. We got the reporter before we saw Major again. We got those little tips and nods to previously established facts and conversations between characters involved in a separate plotline. And it was, you know, working really well. Even though, like I said, it was a completely separate thing in this episode. I really, really loved how smoothly it fit into the entire episode. It wasn't like I was thrown out of the story because of those breaks for Major's story arc. I really, really liked how it, you know, fit with the pacing and everything. So props to the iZombie people.
When it really felt like they were advancing a story, not the crime of the week story and not Liv's story, but this arc that's going on, like the Team Zombie and what's really happening. It felt like it was advancing that and advancing every, I mean, I feel all the pieces of this puzzle, you know, all the chess pieces on this board are moving forward. I just don't know where they're going to come together. Gotham has problems with that. And we won't go into that, because you can go and listen to those podcasts if you so choose, where we talk about those problems. They really are finding ways, I think, to weave everyone really well together. I mean, we have Major connected with Clive and not necessarily helping Clive with his impression on the job because of this article. So Clive, after being ostracized by his vice buddies and having a hard time already in homicide, is having even more of a hard time. Thank you, Major.
Yeah.
We have Clive actually being sidelined even in this case because the chief wants the department to have the credit and all the kudos and everything for finding this rich kid's killer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's being sidelined to all the paperwork, all the minor things that, you know, just keep your busy work. Let's expand the search area even more just to make it even harder for you. And Clive is really trying to stick with his job, but he also still knows something's wrong. So when he comes across that paper that shows that the Sparrows had property in there, he gets out there and investigates. He still is being this good cop. And I like that. I like seeing that he's not just this cocky cop that we saw in the first couple episodes. It's always the wife. If the husband's dead, it's the wife. If the wife's dead, it's the husband. He's really a good cop. And he wants to do his job. And he doesn't realize that he's having to work against Zombie Chief. And who knows how many other zombies on the force. But I really liked Clive in this episode.
I did too. Because at first it was like, yes, because why would you make it easy for me? Like, make my life even more difficult.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I liked how he just took what everybody else threw at him and just, I'm going to keep doing my job. I'm going to be good at it, even though I use a psychic, which still cracks me up a little bit. But I also liked how he handled himself in a way that he knew it wasn't his fault, because it wasn't his fault. He wasn't as defensive as he could have been. He kept telling people that he didn't, you know, talk on the record or something like that. He didn't know the reporter was on the line, but it wasn't in a defensive tone that would make him seem sleazy or even more guilty. It was like,
right,
okay, enough with this. It's not my fault. And I'm pretty sure it's going to blow over at some point. Maybe not too soon, because I'm enjoying this poor, poor arrangement. I have to say that I enjoyed watching him be competent. This is one of the things that I bring up over and over again, because it made such a bad impression on me in the pilot episode that it was all about, oh my god, what I would do without the psychic. So every time I see him being competent and finding the clues by doing the grunt work, the legwork, the paperwork, it gives me this additional pleasure, because he's being competent and I can see how he earned his spot as a detective. And, you know, not a patrolman in a uniform or something like that. So every time I see him connect the dots with some, you know, vague leads here and there, I like him even more, because that's the kind of detective work that I enjoy on my screen when I watch TV shows that don't involve zombie psychics.
Something that I like in the way that he's being written and the way he's acting it is he's not super cop, but he's not incompetent cop. He seems very real to me. Like when they're interrogating the boyfriend, who looks like a total sleaze.
I don't think
he's a boyfriend. I hope it was just a really short-term bad boy phase that Emily had. But when they're interrogating him, he gets sidelined by the chief, and he knows his place. The chief is his boss.
Mm-hmm.
And if your boss says, I'm interrogating the guy, you're just sitting there being quiet. You're not interfering.
Yeah.
He's doing that, but he's still keeping Liv in the loop. He has her where she can see so that he can have those other eyes and whatever to gather information. But like you said, he's not totally relying on that. He's still listening. He's taking notes. He's taking the initiative. When they do find that, when he puts up very well, he was actually being bullied. I wrote, Clive's being bullied at work after that article came out. It's like, come on, guys. You know, that's not how you guys should be acting towards a fellow cop. And just given that busy work, he does find that deed. They do go out to investigate. And he's staying within the letter of the law, but, oh, hey, what was that? Did somebody, I think that was somebody yelling for help to get in. It's like, we have to keep investigating. We have to keep moving forward. Even though Liv was having her visions and was contributing things, it wasn't these great big reveals. It was those nudges that I think Clive would have kind of already had. Like when she's talking about the boyfriend, and he's saying, there's no evidence that's the boyfriend. I can't prosecute without evidence. I don't care how much you say you think it's mm-hmm. him. That's not my job, is to think it's him. My job is to prove who did it.
I think you made a really good comparison a couple of episodes back when you compared Clive to Marcus Bell on Elementary. Which, they are both competent, good detectives. And they could probably solve all those cases on their own, but it would take them a little longer if they didn't have this additional insight. Here it's a zombie psychic, and on Elementary it's Sherlock Holmes. But on their own, they are both really competent and very good detectives. Well, Clive is probably a little less experienced than Marcus Bell, because I don't...
But this is season three.
Yeah, but they are on season three, and Clive is still in season one and probably not all that long into his tenure in Homicide.
Right. Yeah, which we found out a few episodes ago. That he's still actually pretty new to
Homicide. For a new detective in Homicide, I really do feel like he's on the right track to becoming an excellent detective, psychic help or not. So when they, you know, and I also like how he is with Liv right now. Because at the beginning it was a bumpy ride, but I really like that when they are in the field... And we saw that when they got locked in the basement, and later on during the stakeout. Like, he makes sure that she's covered, that she's relatively safe, so to speak. Like, either far away from the action or behind him, so he can be the one shooting bad guys, if necessary, and the possible bullets get him first. Which I really find... Yeah, okay, so they have the dynamic where, you know, she's still going to be going off on her own because, come on, that's the kind of a personality that she has. And she's the main character of the show. But I like that there are certain lines drawn. When he tells her she cannot be in the interrogation room, she takes the next best thing that she gives, Clive gives her, which is the other room with the two-way mirror.
Observation room.
Yeah. And when he goes off to rescue the girls and storm the castle, so to speak, with other cops, she doesn't need to be told, stay in the car. Of course I'm going to stay in the car until I see the treehouse, but yeah. They have guns. I don't. I like the dynamic that she doesn't... That, in a way, she doesn't question his lead on certain things. And he does take into consideration her needs. Well, I need to be there to see it, to get the vision, right? And he does his best to work that into what he has available. I can't give you an interrogation room, but here, have observation room.
What I think is great, though, is, and I think this goes back to the episode where she was questioning Clive, you know, is he a good cop or a bad cop?
Yeah.
With the whole crime that we didn't care a lick about what the actual crime was in that episode. But I think what we were talking about in that one is how that was the turning point where now they're both really going to trust each other. And what I wrote down in my infamous notes, is that Clive and Liv are more friends now. They're not, it's not just, I'm the cop, you're the ME. Mm-hmm. It's not just, I'm the cop, you're the psychic. They trust each other, and they are working really well together, and are forming that partnership. And I like that give and take and play, because they're both going to be looking out for each other, mm-hmm. and really want the other one to succeed. And I think it brings out a lot in each one of them. I mean, I love the fact, and you'd mentioned this about how he's a more than competent police officer in this. He is really putting the pieces together. The fact that they were talking about the search radius, and he gets that, wait a second, the river is in the search radius. What if she didn't get transported there by walking or being carried or something? What if there's the river and that's how she got so far? So we need to move the search radius over here. And that was a really good piece of detective work. It is something that I think Marcus Bell would do as well. That I don't need that help from somebody else to figure out everything. I can figure out stuff too, but it's not the, like you were saying, the defensive, hey, wait, I can do it too. I can figure out things. I've got it. Step back. He's taking what she's giving professionally, but also not letting it hinder what he's doing. Mm. And I just see him continually growing, and he feels much more comfortable. I see the comfort that he has in the role, in his being the police officer, in his dealings with Liv. He just really seems much more comfortable with everything that's going on.
In a way, I feel like the brain that she ate was really well-timed, because by now, by episode 7, when she tells him, be careful, what I got from that scene was that he didn't look at her like it was something weird for her to say, and it wasn't and it didn't feel like it was this awkward first time, be careful. I really, really felt like he got a similar sentiment before, and right now it was, yeah, I'm going to be careful. Like, it wasn't, yeah, that's weird. You've never said that before. I'm going to go over there and, sure, be careful, but I'm going to storm the castle. I really, really liked, because in that moment, it really showed how comfortable the two of them are, not only working together, but, you know, interacting with each other. And like you said, they come off more as friends now. And I feel like, yeah, all we need are a scene or two before the end of the season where they kind of hang out outside of work or interact about something that's not the case. So, and that will kind of cement their friendship in a way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the epic friendship that she has with Ravi or Ravi has with Major, because it doesn't contain Ravi, and Ravi is that awesome part of the bromance. But I really do feel that Clive and Liv are going to be close friends at some point, where it's not only, you know, we work together, and it's not going to be romantic like it turned out to be on Bones and Castle and all those other crime dramas. But they're going to be close, because they're going to have more situations like this one when one of them will have to be careful and the other will worry. So I'm looking forward to it. And if not for anything else, I would want to see the show renewed so I could see their friendship develop and grow.
I see them kind of like, in some of the shows that we've mentioned here, I see them almost like how Ryan and Esposito are on Castle.
Yes.
Where I believe those two are, you know, totally improbable outside of being thrown together as partners on the force, but such incredibly close friends and relying on each other, but still having very separate lives, still, you know, doing their own thing. But what happens with the other one is, you know, a paramount, you know, something that is just really important to them. So I want to see that friendship. And I like the fact that while Liv is going off crazy because of whatever brain she's had, and in this one we have the mother, and she really she really got a big dose of mama brain. We didn't even see her eat that much of it, and the whole episode was just super mom nesting and all sorts of things. He still took what she was giving her, but wasn't sidelined by it. Wasn't, like you were saying in the first episode, relying so heavily on it that that's all he saw. He's trusting himself and he's trusting her and putting the pieces together. A piece I don't think he's going to put together anytime soon is that his chief, his boss, is a zombie.
Yeah.
I was really happily scared watching this guy in this episode.
Mm.
Because he just had this menace to him. But he's still a good guy. Because, in the police, he's still fighting against the bad guys. He was doing all this, but that scene, I'm just going to go ahead and jump to the end with the chief there. That scene when they're storming the house and he kills first the man and then kills the animal control woman, both in total cold blood. He gets shot and he goes full on zombie mode. And then he gets the fridge door like Captain America and kills the first guy. Because that's exactly what I thought of. I'm like, oh, you've been watching the Avengers, have you? And then he goes and finds the woman and shoots her. I mean, just total, wow, coldness. But it's like he's a bad zombie on the good side. I don't know. It's intriguing.
Mm. What I found interesting about him, because I found two things interesting about him. I am really becoming fascinated with his character because, first of all, I really, really enjoyed the fact that even though he went full on zombie mode, he still killed those people with a gun, which implies some sort of cognitive function remaining, and it's not all instinct for him.
Right.
Because he didn't go, "Grrr, I'm going to, rip your throat out with my teeth." He went, "I'm going to shoot you," which he promptly did. And that was like, wow, okay. So this implies the amount of control over himself when he is in zombie mode that is probably hard, groundbreaking, because we haven't seen that much control in anyone aside from Liv, and Liv gets her brains like almost on a daily basis, and it's fresh brains. And the second thing that I really, really loved about him was that at the end when he asked Liv if she's hurt, and she said, "No, it's just a branch or something," and he went, "Yeah, little blood and everything." And all those alarm bells went off in my head because, this is a hint for him that Liv isn't exactly alive. Which begs the question that how broken exactly is her zombie-dar? That she doesn't, she doesn't sense other zombies until they come out to her, basically. It's been the case with every zombie she met.
It's that pretty and pinkness in her. She's still pre-death Liv in that aspect, in seeing the good in people that she thinks are supposed to be good. And he's the chief of police. Yeah, he's gruff, but he's the chief. So of course he's going to be gruff. He's the boss of all these guys. And everybody else, I guess, goes to the drugstore to get, hair dye. And goes to tanning salons. And Liv is the only one that's decided. It makes me wonder that almost like that's his final clue. I wonder if he's already got it, just like Lowell figured it out by her skin and her hair, that she was a zombie. It's like, well, has the chief, did he have an inkling of that? And the shot in the leg just kind of confirms it for him? Has he always known, or... does the shot the first thing that gets him? I'm thinking that, like I said, he's that good guy. the bad guy on the good guy side? Because, yeah, where does he get his brains? Well, he's kind of covering up the missing kids. So does that mean he's one of Blaine's customers? Because he needs the brains?
A different question. Well, it's a somewhat follow-up to yours, because if he gets his brains from Blaine, did he already know, outside of his own figuring it out, that Liv was a zombie? That's one thing. And almost connected to it all, now that he knows for sure that Liv is a zombie, what will he do with that information? Which begs the question, now that he knows she's a zombie, what will he do with that information? Because I keep wondering, like you, what side of this is he on? I would prefer he be one of the good guys, because he has clear power over both Clive and Liv and Ravi. So he could make lives miserable for them. Even, you know, fire.
Well, and now Major too.
Yeah. So, there are three options here. He's either a team zombie, he's either a good guy, or he's this ambiguous, neutral, I'm going to do whatever is best for me kind of guy. So I either want good or neutral for him. I feel like Liv could use somebody in a position of power with insight in it, into the whole zombie thing, because that would make Clive's life really, really easy. Because he would be able to explain Liv's presence by this, you know, fact that, hey, she ate the victim's brain, and now we're getting inside into the case. Mm-hmm. But like you said, where is he getting his brains? And the source of said brains will ultimately, you know, tell us whether or not he's the good guy or the bad guy. I enjoy not knowing.
I think he's going to be kind of a nebulous. I think he's basically a good guy, but he's in a tough position. Mm. Because if you're a zombie in a non-zombie world and you need brains, where do you get them? So maybe he's kind of in Blaine's back pocket because he has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe knowing Liv is one. That, I think, could tip him either way. It's like, well, if Liv's one, she's on my police side, my public face side. Maybe I can make a connection there. Or maybe he will use that with Blaine. But I hope not, because we've seen what happens with Jackie.
Yeah.
When she tried to get the upper hand on him. I think we'll see, because we did see those scenes with Liv and her mom and Evan. And Liv, because of her maternal instincts now, has basically helped push Evan into, you've got to go get a job. And of course, the top application was for Meet Cute.
Well, duh.
So maybe if we see Evan delivering to the chief, we'll have a little more insight in that. But I think this is another thing I think is really interesting about this show, is this chief is a character we don't have to care about. But they're putting just enough in that it's making it intriguing. And they're answering some questions. Like, we're like, okay, when you go in full on zombie mode, can you control yourself? He did, and Liv did. I mean, she gets shot, she goes full on zombie mode, but then uses that strength to break into the treehouse to rescue these women. She easily could have just killed those women for their brains, but she can rein it back. He could have easily, like you said, killed both of them for their brains, but he reined it back in and ended up being the cop. So I think it's interesting that they do get to have that control over that mode, almost.
Yeah.
That it's not just, you know, rage is on or rage is off. Let's move out of the the crime a little bit and talk a little bit more about that rage on, rage off, and the effects of being a zombie and the effects of brains. Let's start first with how cute is it seeing Liv in total mommy mode with, I love her like licking her finger to clean off the face and doing all that. Like her and Ravi just were so adorable, and it didn't end with how she was treating Ravi, you know, having, have you eaten, you know, doing the, I call it the lick and slick on his hair, and, you know, you should eat something with vegetables if you choose it, you know. It didn't end with that though. She was that way the entire episode, and it was so adorable.
I loved it. I wanted to replay those scenes over and over and over again, and let me tell you, Tumblr, do not fail me, GIF the hell out of those moments where she cradled the rat, where she studded babies, where she teamed up with her own mother to bully her brother into doing something with his life, and when she was cleaning up Clive's face, I just, oh my god, this was possibly the most brilliant brain that she had so far, because it was just enough over the top to make it obvious that this is not her natural instinct, that this is something she acquired and it's foreign to her, but at the same time it felt both, you know, fake in a way that, you know, you just knew that any other way she would not be doing this, and it was so condensed in one single episode that it felt, oh my god, what am I watching? But it was so delicious and so amazing, the way Rose acted it out, like, give her all the awards. I enjoyed it tremendously. Like, I can use all the big words that I've learned in my years of learning English just to describe how much I enjoyed it. Like, all the big words. It was amazing. It's been a while since I've had so much fun. And after the disappointing Gotham episodes of other shows we podcast, this felt like a godsend. Amazing.
First off, I can empathize with her a little bit because, come on, Alex, even with your black heart, that was one cute baby. Oh my goodness, that baby was so freaking adorable.
Oh yeah.
So
cute. I am hesitant to admit it, but that baby, okay, it's a really photogenic baby. It was cute as a button.
It's so cute. And I loved watching her, like, looking at this baby and the look on her face when it's like, he's not crying, or she's not crying, but she needs to be picked up. She's awake. They need to take care of her. And I'm like, that's just so cute. You are just so cute. I just love this. No, I'm getting all squealy. It does come out even in those of us that have the blackest hearts, that it's like, oh.
But the thing is, even when she was cradling the rat, she made it so believable, I wanted to go hug that rat. Because, oh my god, you poor thing, you're going to be experimented on. Let's name him. Let's name him and let's keep him. And I really hope somebody finds him and saves him soon. Spoilers.
It was really sweet how the brain, the maternity brain, also really helped her bring her mother and Evan into the story, how it connects her back with her family.
Yeah.
And it gives them a reason for being there. Again, something I'm very impressed with is all these supporting characters are getting reasons for being on the show. Not in her life, but on the show.
Mm.
And it was really nice seeing that moment at the end with her and her mom and her brother just sitting there and laughing and having a good time and connecting. I thought that was really sweet and something that needed to happen.
In a way, every brain she eats allows her to grow. But this one especially, allowed her to establish emotional connections with people close to her, her family, Ravi, Clive, and fine, I'm going to call him Lowell. But I loved how it made sense. Yeah. And how she even made a comment at the end in the voiceover, how this made her connect with her mom on a completely new and different level, where she could finally relate to her own mother. And I feel like their relationship, because of that, is going to improve a lot in the upcoming episodes. At least I hope that we're going to see actual improvement from the pilot, where they, you know, had somehow colder interactions. And it's been growing, but I feel like because of this brain, this particular brain, this episode, their relationship, like, it wasn't one step forward, two steps back, as they do, but it was like 10 steps forward just because of that maternity brain that she got, which is really awesome. Because let's give Liv's family more screen time, especially her mom, who's apparently hospital administrator. Something I don't think I knew from the pilot.
Yeah, and in obviously in the maternity or family ward or something. And it was nice to have that resolution at the end, where at the beginning we have Liv coming to look at the baby, mom thinking she's coming to talk to her. Oh, you're not. Of course. Why would I think you're coming to have lunch with your mother? Yeah. And at the end, it's actually really nice. So we have this nice resolution with her family. I think something also that's really nice is, because of this brain, what she does, yeah, they get closure. You catch the bad guy. You solve this mystery. But somebody's still dead in the end of all of these different crimes that she's working on. This kind of actually reminded me of a Doctor Who episode, Doctor Dances, where at the end, Christopher Eccleston's doctor is like, everybody lives. He's happy because it wasn't where some people died. At the end, she made a difference. She confronted the boyfriend who wanted to do this whole, you know, reality show type thing, like Anna Nicole's baby and baby daddy, let's do reality and exploit everything. And she's able to get through to him, where we see he realizes that the best thing for this baby is to be raised by the mother's parents. Mm. And I like that moment that she did something good that is living, that is continuing on. It's not just solving the crime and getting justice. It's she made a difference in this baby's life, who she has an attachment to, because for a brief time, she was the mother.
Yeah. I like how she even calls it our baby.
You're right. That is nice.
That was a nice touch. I really felt like it went well with the whole point of view that we're getting in this episode. So that was a nice touch, and I really, really enjoyed it. Among a lot of other things. But she wasn't the one, the only one affected by the brains that she ate. No. And that I felt was amazing also.
Well, and deeply affected. Yeah. Because we have, this is something else you and I have talked about. How long do the effects last, and how deep are they? We have near the beginning of, or nearer to the beginning of the episode, when we have Lowell. And let's give you props, yay, for actually using the character's name. It only took how many episodes for him to move on from Arthur Pendragon? We have Lowell coming in for his tests with Ravi so that, you know, Ravi can work on doing the cure. I loved watching Lowell and Ravi interact with this whole metacognition type thing and going on and realizing, oh, it's the brain. I ate somebody. It's in my smoothie. You know, it's like he's smart, spouting off all this smart stuff. And him and Ravi are able to totally geek out while Liv is just sitting there in her maternity brain going, what? So we get to see him do that, which I loved. I love when they do the super geek talk and everybody gets into it. And then the next time that we see him, probably one of my favorite things is...
But I think it was the same, you know, brain. He was on the same brain during the entire episode. Because, it started in the morgue when they were saying goodbyes. And he was already...
That's true.
...disinterested. So I'm pretty sure that was one person that he ate.
Okay. Yeah, you probably are right. Yeah. Well, and that might also connect why he was connecting with Ravi so much better. Yeah. Because later on, I love how they kiss and it's ew. That's not the kind of reaction that you ever want. I mean, she hears, yeah, you're right, actually, because, yeah, when she's talking with Ravi, she's like, awesome sauce and a buddy punch. I'm in the friend zone. And Ravi's doing this whole, I can't give you the whole girlfriend treatment, which.
Yeah, let's go back to talking brains.
Means something else. Yeah. Ravi's like, let's get back on the science thing. I love that part when Lowell does say, I'm gay. At least while I'm on this brain. I mean, that look on her face, like, no. Oh, okay.
I really, really enjoyed because they appear to be picking up different aspects of the people they eat. And apparently they can acquire sexuality, which opens up a whole new, area of possibilities of where they can go with Liv, with Lowell, with Blaine, with everybody. And the fanfic just writes itself. I'm just saying. But I really, really liked how it, their diet, who they're, because last week what Liv ate affected their relationship because she was trapped in the apartment and couldn't leave. And this week, he ate a batch of gay, basically. And they couldn't, get it on. But I love how they adjusted. And instead of, a passionate night in, they had this really awesome friend date. Where they had fun, and it looked fun. And I was like, I want that. Include me next time, because that looked awesome. They did everything and talked. And I feel like that also helped push their relationship forward. Because if they couldn't have the sexual chemistry, they had to establish a different connection. So they had to talk about their past and exchange embarrassing photos, apparently. And everything.
Very embarrassing.
Yeah, come on. So I really, really like where the writers took it. The character who became, came in as probably this alternative to Major, this zombie alternative, is turning into an actual love interest where he's not the alternative to Major. But he's this whole new person because he offers Liv a dynamic, not only because he's a zombie, but he offers Liv a dynamic where he can become a person that knows her as well as Major, with additional perks of, having a different personality every week, because that will make your relationship interesting.
What I like about it too is, we're not just taking on personality traits. We're actually taking on what that person is.
Mm.
Because if he's seeing this, this brain is gay. I love when he talks about the big piece of yum that is Idris Elba.
Which yum, we agree.
Totally agree. Awesome actor and a big piece of yum. But this is, it's not just, I like to act this way. I like to be this way. It's actually really who that person was. It's not like little choices or things. It's embodying who that person was. But it's still, it's like this symbiotic relationship. It's kind of, because they're still themselves. It's not like Lowell is no longer Lowell. It's just he also has this other being with him. So it's not that I don't like doing all the stuff that they were doing, you know, what they were dancing to or singing or games they were playing. He cannot moonwalk, by the way.
Yeah, that was terrible. Moonwalk.
It was hilarious. I loved it. But he cannot moonwalk. It's still him, but it's also the other person. And that's kind of a good reflection, too, with Liv. It's still Liv. Everything about Liv is still Liv. She's just kind of like how, where was it, back on the stakeout where Clive was talking about, you know, back with our detectives, Ebony and Ivory. Mm. I love that line. But he was talking about, you know, never having the sugar on a stakeout and how he made that mistake of,
yeah,
you know, having the sugar and the powdered donuts on the heroin stakeout. It's, they're still very much themselves, but they're also that other person. And it's something that only he's going to be able to experience with her. No matter how much Major knows her, he's never going to know what that feeling is like. I hope yeah. Major never finds out of being yourself, but also being somebody else at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is something that Lowell can bring that nobody else can. And again, I'm rooting for Major. I'm rooting for Lowell. I'm rooting for Liv. I can't pick a favorite because I'm really loving these characters more and more every episode.
They were awesome. Basically, we ship them with happiness. And all that matters, really.
And it's nice seeing Liv really, really happy, like when she's talking about, you know, last week she was buying new underwear because it's that kind of a good, you know, that's how excited she is and how excited when she gets the text about how he's feeling more hetero already. It's like, ooh, she's excited about her future. And that's really nice to see.
The one thing I this is a completely random comment and that nobody will probably relate to, but the one thing that popped into my mind when I was watching that scene when he quote unquote came out to live, came into my mind was whether or not Glad is going to count his scenes in this episode in their annual network responsibility report, where they count every minute of screen time that LGBT characters have, and then grade networks on how good they did in the past season. And that was the one thing that randomly popped into my brain, whether or not Lowell will be counted as an LGBT character because he ate a gay brain. That is my life, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you're welcome. Well, for that period of time, he was. But he wasn't cured. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
He wasn't cured.
Which is what I wondered, on whether or not they will count him as an LGBT character for that one episode, and how they would address that, you know, I ate a gay brain and therefore I am into Idris Elba. Which, by the way, everybody should be into Idris Elba, because that man, yikes.
He's a big piece of yum.
Yeah. That is a perfect description.
I like how they treated it, because I didn't feel that they were negating or belittling or doing a caricature of, you know, being gay at mm-hmm. all. It didn't feel like they were talking down. It, like I said, I like the fact that it was treated like...
Like Liv's maternity brain, basically.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't just traits. It was mm-hmm. part of who he was. It wasn't this little choice thing that, you know, like some people that think you can choose to be gay.
It didn't feel well worked into the established reality that the show mm-hmm. already gave us over the past 6-7 episodes. So I really liked the way they handled it. And, you know, basically, I am looking forward to all the fanfic with Lowell. Yeah. and possibly a wizard.
Maybe he was a half-gay character, because he was still Lowell. I mean, I love that scene with him and Ravi talking about all the colonist propaganda and going back and forth between the football teams. As long as it wasn't Chelsea.
Yes, that was... I found that exchange, like, so hilarious, because that is our life in Europe. That is how it works.
I had some good friends that were very into football. And yeah, they had their Arsenal and everything. And there was the one girl that was a Chelsea fan. And everybody was like, really? It's very funny.
Which, by the way,
I'm not taking sides. I'm not taking sides.
But you already did, because you called it football. Like an actual
real football.
Person. I approve.
I called it football. I didn't say football. I said football. F-U-T-B-O-L. Yeah, well, that's as much as you're getting from me on that one. Let's go ahead and wrap this up with our little teaser that we had in this episode. As Ravi is doing experiments and getting the samples from any zombies he knows, he's also doing testing on rats.
Yeah.
This is where we have the whole, Liv, you're rocking a rat, which I'm just like, oh my gosh. She looks so comfortable rocking that rat too. It's like, you're actually making it look cute. We have him explaining, which I liked. He explained to Lowell when Lowell's talking about, well, which one's the control and blah, blah, blah. And so we have A, B, C, D, E, and we're talking about how much of the utopium they're all getting. And everybody looks fine and dandy and normal. Until the end, when we see that Rat E did go all full-on zombie mode.
But the control rat escaped. Did you see?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep hoping that this is the one that Liv was rocking. That's my headcanon. And do not tell me otherwise. This is the one that escaped. So I'm really hoping that somebody is going to find him and, you know, save him.
It was a nice little teaser of what's to come. So I approve. I approve of what they did there. Okay, so on our Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale, where are you going to rate Maternity Liv? What pepper do we get?
I absolutely, absolutely loved it, so I'm giving it a weary a 10, and it's such a perfect 10 then that when I was making a note of what pepper it was, and I wrote down a 10 next to it, so I knew where it landed on the scale, and I wouldn't have to use a cheat sheet. I actually put a little heart around that 10 because I loved it so much. It was a perfect 10. I loved it. I want more where it came from. I am so in love. Yeah, so it's a perfect 10. What about you?
We actually have a 10 plus, so you do still have one more scale on the scale that you know. Well, you're doing weary. I really did enjoy this episode, and I really loved moments. I ironically am going down to a piri, which is an 8. I still really enjoyed it, but it didn't come together as perfectly as my weary piri that I did. I think that was last week.
Blasphemy.
There, I don't know, just overall, when I finished with it, I'm just like, that was really good. And I was like, okay, I can't rate it. If I'm saying really good, I can't rate it higher than an 8. So, you're weary, I'm piri. Those are still pretty hot, though.
Yeah. And it was, they are really giving us strong episodes. And they're consistently good. After that, you know, so-and-so pilot, they kept getting better, and they are right now delivering really good stuff. So I'm excited for what's to come. We have 6 episodes left, so this might be a really, really strong season.
Our next episode is called Dead Air. It says, Liv has a vision that might be a game changer. Liv and Clive work together to solve a murder of a morning radio talk show host who specialized in relationship straight talk. Liv becomes filled to the brim with insight after consuming the brains, making Clive extremely uncomfortable when Liv starts getting personal.
It's going to be brilliant.
Meanwhile, Peyton, Peyton's coming back.
She's back.
Steps in to help Major. Yay, Major's back, which makes sense because she's in the attorney's office and with him being in jail, so that helps. And Blaine issues a warning. Ruh-roh. Lastly, Ravi's unexpected romantic connection has the potential to make things awkward for Liv.
Ooh. I wonder who that is. I bet it's good. I wonder who they will go with.
I am really looking forward to that. I read everything to Alex except for that last sentence about Ravi having unexpected romantic connection. I can't wait to see that because he's just going to be so, so cute. One final thing is in this episode, we did have a promo for Avengers Age of Ultron, where we got to see a deeper look at Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. We have Avengers coming out very, 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 very soon. And we want you to go over to scififorme.com and check out Level 117, which is our Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. I know they're going to be talking more Avengers. Alex will be talking some Avengers, but that'll be off air. Because she squeeze about various things. But we are looking forward to that. Make sure that you follow and like scififorme.com. And don't forget to go over to Twitter. Follow Sci-Fi for Chicks. We want to see you there. We're going to try and get some tweets out and some fun stuff about Major and Clive, and I'm sure Lowell. We'll have some Lowell things on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Rose, of course. We adore Rose. We adore Rose. Also, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. We'd love to hear from you and see what you thought about this episode. You can call us on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI, or email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. You ready for Ravi to have a little bit of romance and Clive to get really uncomfortable about Liv's?
Oh, it's going to be brilliant. I cannot wait.
Well, you're going to have to wait because it's not on until next week and we don't have screener copies. So
can't
see it early.
The sacrifices I make.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. Don't forget to check out our final Gotham podcast of the season, and maybe our final Gotham podcast, who knows. And of course, our Orphan Black podcast as well. You can get those all when you subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Right, Liv, I didn't want to have to tell you like this, but I'm gay. But not to worry, it's only till I ate my next brain.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, I knew something was up, but I didn't really get it until I saw a magazine with Idris Elba on the cover and the phrase, big piece of yum, popped into my head. I mean, I'm mildly afraid of heights, but I would not hesitate to climb that mountain.
I feel you. So, we're good?
We're great. My plan is to score some ludicrously straight brain ASAP. I may dig up Wilt Chamberlain.
So, now what, we get drunk and play Do Dump or Date, boy band edition?
Do Harry Dum Zane Date Liam. Sorry, should I have had to think longer about that?
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.